Penguin Random House Audio presents Pony Confidential by Christina Lynch. Read for you by Aaron Moon and Blair Young. For all the ponies I have loved, and for Addie, future pony girl. The greatest obstacle to the study of animal emotions is the common objection that we cannot know what they feel. While this is undeniably true, we should realize that it also holds for fellow human beings. Frantz Duval, What is an Animal Emotion? Prologue. Penny Marcus opens her front door to find Ed, the local sheriff's deputy, on the doorstep. It's a bright, sunny spring day, and it never crosses her mind that something is amiss, partly because she saw Ed at the coffee shop just this morning, as she does every morning, before she heads off to teach third grade in the little California mountain town where they live. They're both latte people. "Hey, Ed," she says, opening the door with a smile and smoothing the front of her light blue linen sundress with lemons on it. "Your little girl aced her math quiz today."
"Hi, Penny," says Ed.
He seems a bit apologetic as he says,
"Can you stick your hands out for me?"
She laughs. Ed is a little bit of a prankster. He had a role in their local theater production of Arsenic and Old Lace last year. He was hilarious as the cop who is always one step behind the murderous old ladies. Penny plays along and sticks out her hands, and Ed snaps handcuffs on her. "Ha ha ha," she says. "What are you auditioning for now, Murder, She Wrote?" She hefts the cuffs a couple times. "Hey, these things are heavier than I thought," she adds pointedly. "And kind of tight and uncomfortable." Ed doesn't smile.
"You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law."
"Yeah, we've all memorized it. Very funny, but I have to get back to grading the kids' homework. The spelling bee is tomorrow. Can you take these things off now?"
"You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you."
Her stomach begins to churn a little. "Ed, what is this?" Almost apologetically, he says,
"You're under arrest for murder."
Penny blinks. "Murder? Ed, excuse my language, but I have no effing idea what you're talking about. Murder of whom? Who died?" He checks his phone.
"Doesn't say. You're being extradited to New York."
Penny just stares at him in shock. "New York?" Her mind is whirling. "When did this supposed murder take place?" He looks at his phone again and counts on one hand.
Just about 25 years ago.
"Ed, 25 years ago, I was 12 years old. 12. A 12-year-old little girl." Ed shrugs.
"I'm sorry, Penny. I can't say more. I'm just doing my job. You'll have to come with me."
He checks his watch, which Penny knows was a gift from the town to honor his first 10 years of service. She herself had contributed $10 to the purchase of that watch, had even lobbied for the thick brown leather band instead of a blue nylon one that she worried would chafe his wrist. Now, it's her wrists that are chafing. "Come on, Ed," she says. "This is crazy. Please, let me go." Part 1. A Taste for Revenge and Carrots. Chapter 1. Penny. Ed has brought Penny to a courthouse in Fresno, where a lawyer she met 30 seconds ago is talking fast.
"Okay, so because the crime was committed in New York and you left the state, you're considered a fugitive from justice."
"But I wasn't accused of a crime at the time I left the state, which was 25 years ago." Penny is trying to remain calm, but it's not easy.
"It doesn't matter. For the purposes of the law, you're considered a wanted fugitive."
Penny has a flash of her face on a post office wall.
This can't be happening, she says. The lawyer has thick black hair and kind eyes, and Penny has a vague recollection of seeing his face on a billboard alongside the highway, next to a walnut orchard. She can tell he's trying to simplify it all for her, but it still feels like he's speaking in a language she can't understand. He says,
Also, because you were only 12 at the time, you could be tried in juvenile court.
Penny thinks of the elementary school where she teaches, with little child-sized desks and chairs and drinking fountains. Is juvenile court like that? Tiny handcuffs and miniature gavels? Will she be like Alice in Wonderland in an orange jumpsuit, her head and feet sticking out of the bars of a playhouse-sized jail cell?
But if found guilty, you would serve your time in regular adult prison, the lawyer adds.
Prison? Penny is trying to focus on what the lawyer is saying, but she's also still waiting for someone to tell her this is all a joke. It's not April Fool's, but there's gotta be a punchline here somewhere, right? Does this prank come with a TV appearance? A check? At this point, she'd settle for an apology and getting dropped at the bus stop.
In juvenile court, you won't have the right to a jury trial or bail, says the lawyer. I would advise you to waive the fitness hearing when you get to New York and go straight to adult court. You do have the right to an extradition hearing here, but it would only be a delaying tactic.
I don't want any delays. I want this straightened out right now, Penny says. Penny sits in the back of Ed's police car, staring out the window on the way to the airport, marveling at the strange twist her day has taken. To avoid conversation, Ed has put a country music station on loud, so Penny is treated to a series of songs about heartbreak, tequila, and Chevys. He takes pity on her when a song called Way Too Pretty for Prison comes on. But when he spins the dial, it lands on Taylor Swift crooning No Body, No Crime. Ed meets her eyes in the rearview mirror and turns the radio off. But the silence is even more excruciating. Surely the next stop will be a restaurant full of people shouting, Surprise! Won't it? Penny tries to distract herself by examining the vehicles they are passing, guessing where the people inside are going. The truckers are taking their loads to big box stores. The commuters are racing home after a stop to shop at the big box stores. It's Central California, so there are trucks full of tomatoes headed for sauce and oranges headed for juice. They pass a huge semi labeled Bob's Racehorse Transport. And Penny catches a glimpse through the windows of sleek thoroughbreds wearing halters with fluffy sheepskin padding. She wonders what the horses think, zooming down the highway in a metal box. Not many vehicles later comes a gooseneck rig emblazoned with names of roping championships and a pair of sorrel quarter horses napping inside. They don't get to choose where they go, she thinks, nor what they eat or wear. It's all out of their control. More trucks of tomatoes, more oranges. They pull alongside a little rickety 1940s-era two-horse straight-load trailer with an open back and sides. Hand-painted on the trailer, it says, Magical Unicorn Rides, and an 800 number. Penny presses her nose to the car window and peers out. A white pony inside the trailer turns its head and stares back at Penny. The pony's mane and tail have been dyed bright pink. Not my choice, says the pony's expression. Penny blinks, and the pony blinks back.
I had a pony when I was little, says Ed.
Me too, says Penny.
Mine was a pinto. What was yours?
The color of the sun. They are both quiet for a minute. Happiest days of my life, Penny says.
Yeah,
Ed agrees. Penny shifts, trying to position her handcuffed hands in a way that doesn't hurt. The white pony continues to stare back at her. As the police car finally leaves behind the pony in its rattling metal box, Penny is left with the vision of the too tight halter cutting into the pony's nose,
and the expression in the pony's large...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?